Chapter 29. It's taken hours to organize and go through the files that were left scattered on the floor of Lou Morisot's office. Stephen's eyes have gone blurry. Belle is sitting slumped in her chair. The room is quiet and has the somber feel of a funeral visitation. "Nothing," Belle finally says. Stephen arches his back and feels the cracking of his spine. "All I can guess is that whatever's going on, it doesn't have a thing to do with your brother's business dealings. It must be something personal. The envelope was addressed to you, Belle. Any idea why? You're about to become a lawyer, so maybe something legal? Kill Katie? It doesn't take a lawyer to know that's definitely against the law," Belle replies. "You said you've done work with Mother Earth always, right?"
"Yes."
"And you said that even though Lou has pretty much turned his back on his native heritage, he sometimes has dealings with First Nations folks. Is it possible whatever's going on has something to do with those dealings, something that might be important for Mother Earth always to know about?"
Belle ponders that possibility for a few moments.
"Maybe. Let's look at that map again."
Stephen clears the folder files from Morisot's desk and lays out the map with all the interconnecting lines.
"Belle, can you pull up a map of Canada on Lou's computer?"
A minute later, she has it on the screen. They stare at it for a while, then Belle says, "If you're right and it's about First Nations business, let's take a look at the reserves." She maneuvers the mouse and taps some keys, revealing a different map of Canada, one with shaded areas here and there across the broad stretch of the country. Stephen sees it immediately.
"The lines on our map. So many of them connect to First Nations reserves."
"What are they?" Belle asks.
"I don't know. Roads? Rivers? Maybe communication lines of some kind? Broadband connections, maybe?"
"Could they be cultural connections?" Belle offers. "Clan connections?"
"Or pipelines. We're getting a lot of our oil from Canada these days."
Belle shakes her head.
"Too many, and they don't go anywhere near the tar sands."
Stephen's cell phone rings. It's Sheriff Dross.
"Some troubling news, Stephen," she says without preamble. "We've lost communication with your dad. He hasn't checked in for several hours, and we can't raise him on the sat phone. He should have reached Fish Eye Lake, but we can't be certain if he did or what he found. And there's more, something we don't know how to interpret."
She hesitates, and Stephen prepares himself for more bad news.
"The search plane has flown over the area several times since refueling. They can't see Henry Malou's body."
An ember of hope begins to glow in Stephen's heart.
"Maybe he wasn't dead."
"His body could have been moved, Stephen, buried or thrown in the lake to hide it. We won't know anything for sure until the search party gets there. They're bushwhacking their way through, but still a couple of hours from the lake."
"Any sign of Rainey and the others?"
"None."
"And the men tracking them?"
"Nothing. It's dense forest, hard to spot anything."
"How are you progressing down there? Anything hopeful?"
Stephen explains what they've just discovered, but that they still don't understand the connection.
"What about the thumb drive?" "We haven't cracked the passcode, so no. But we'll keep working, and when we come up with something, we'll let you know,"
Stephen promises. When he's ended the call, he reports the gist of his conversation to Belle.
"They think Henry might still be alive?" "Marcia wasn't willing to go that far."
"What about your vision?"
"Henry has often said that a vision may not be the thing itself, only the reflection of the thing. What it means is that sometimes the vision doesn't show you something concrete. It shows you a representation that requires interpreting. So Henry dead might not be Henry dead."
Belle takes Stephen's hand and squeezes it warmly.
"Let's hold to that hope."
I think I need a break, Stephen says. My brain is fried. It's hours past lunch, Belle says. Let's take a break and grab a bite. She puts together two plates, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with some chips, which she takes to the living room where Stephen has spread out the map of Canada on the coffee table. They're quiet as they eat, and although he feels as if his brain is turning to mush, he can't help continuing to study the spiderweb of lines trying to decipher their meaning. Maybe this map and the map of the reserves have absolutely nothing to do with each other, he says. As far as you know, your brother has no interest in Native affairs. Maybe that's changed. We haven't seen him much in the last few months. I don't even know what he looks like. She stands up and goes to a framed photograph sitting on a shelf near the mantel. She brings it back and sets it on the coffee table where Stephen can see it. Is that you? Stephen says. When I graduated from law school, Lou was ecstatic for me. And that's Lou. Yeah. Stephen studies the man in the photograph, and slowly something emerges from deep in his recollection. Oh, my God. What is it? I've seen him before. Where? Stephen looks at her, wondering if she will believe him. In a dream, he says. You saw Lou in a dream. Do you mean a vision? Belle doesn't sound disbelieving, for which Stephen is grateful. That's how my visions come to me, in dreams. When did you see him? Last night. Stephen tells her about the dream of the man in the clearing and the two battling Wendigos. And you're sure the man was Lou? I'm sure. Maybe you saw him in another photograph while we were searching the house, and he became part of your dream. It's possible, but the dream still means something. You saw Lou become a Wendigo. She sits, puts the photograph on the coffee table, and studies it. If Lou is one of the Wendigos, who is the other? Katie, maybe? Stephen offers. Katie, Belle says, standing and walking away from the desk. I don't even know who she is, and I hate her with a passion. Unless your brother's trying to save her, Stephen says. Maybe she's, I don't know, some kind of pawn in whatever's going on. And what the hell could that be? Stephen stares at the map again. Real estate, maybe? That's what your brother deals in. A lot of the lines connect with First Nations reserves, so maybe it has something to do with buying or selling native holdings. He's worked with land transfers on reserves in Canada before, on reservations here in the States too. The issues can be complex, and it's one of his areas of expertise. But what would the lines have to do with reserve land holdings? Could they be right of ways? Stephen offers. Right of ways. Belle considers the map. Maybe, but like you've said, not for oil pipelines. So what then? The doorbell rings and almost immediately rings again, as if the visitor is impatient. Belle rises to answer and the doorbell rings a third time. Stephen doesn't like the aggressiveness of their caller and he gets up too. Belle opens the door with Stephen beside her. Two men stand in the shade of the porch. They're dressed in dark gray suits. Their faces have a dour gray aspect as well. One appears to be in his early 50s, thinning hair. The other is a good deal younger. Both stand as rigid as fence posts. The older man lifts an ID holder for them to see. I'm Officer Peterson, and this is Officer Orlock, he says. We're from the Canadian Intelligence and Security Service. We're looking for Louis Morisot.